Okay, so last time we essentially started a tiny bit discussing Rolle's Riemann solver, which is an approximate Riemann solver that is supposed to make the computational problem in a general case more cheaper, so cheaper for our supercomputers. Think of like a typical practical problem in multi dimensions where you have three spatial dimensions or so. And every time step in the Godunov scheme, we have to compute and solve a Riemann problem at each cell interface. And that can be easily, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of Riemann problems at one given time. And so as you explored now on the problem set, if you use sort of an exact Riemann solver, there's some iteration procedure involved, and so that takes some time. Also, this is error prone to some extent because, for example, doing a Newton-Raphson iteration scheme to find the pressure, and that, so some of the primitives in the star region, in this intermediate region between the left and the right nonlinear wave, that might actually fail. So depending on what you use as initial guesses, for example, and depending on how the function locally looks like, there might be problems with convergence. So you're not guaranteed that it will be successful. And that is a big problem in practice. Think of like solving a million of these problems. And if just a tiny percentage of these problems would not converge or would result in numerical problems, then your code would simply crash and stop and you would not be able to go on. So the motivation for getting rid of exact Riemann solvers is twofold. So one, that you want something that is more robust, and second, you would like something that is also cheaper to evaluate and so cheaper to solve, and so to speed up the computation or make a given problem, a given simulation, feasible, computationally feasible at all. And so, as I noted last time, there over the last couple of decades, there have been several proposals of potential simplifications here of so different approximate Riemann solvers. So one of the first ideas was is due to Rolle. And we quickly started discussing this. So the basic idea, as we wrote down at the end of last lecture of the last lecture, was to essentially replace the nonlinear problem at the cell interfaces by a linearized version, where we would sort of crudely put things into a linearized fashion, so that we only have to solve a linear Riemann problem. And as I'll note in a second, we haven't discussed this yet in detail, but I'll note in, you know, a few minutes from now, that one can easily write down the solution to a linear Riemann problem, where we can use essentially analytic formulae, and so evaluate and evaluate the solution essentially just by plugging in values into analytic formulae. So this is attractive from that point of view. But it also comes with some disadvantages that we'll discuss later on. So the basic idea is here we approximate, so we essentially write the conservation law in a quasi-linear fashion, where we define some matrix here, A LR, which is typically a function of the states at the two sides of the cell interface, as a approximation to the actual Jacobian of our flux function f. And so I listed last time a few conditions that we want this matrix to satisfy. So in order to make the problem essentially well posed in some sense, to actually guarantee that it approximates our nonlinear conservation law. The first one being this relation here that is sometimes referred to as conservation across discontinuities. So that just make sure that we actually resolve strong shocks and motivate this in a few seconds. The second sort of reasonable assumption that we have to make is that it actually approximates the Jacobian, so that in some norm, in some vector norm, essentially this approximate Jacobian approaches the actual Jacobian, as the difference between the two cell the states of the two cell interfaces go to zero. So this is the consistency condition with the Jacobian. And then finally, obviously, we want to retain the hyperbolic nature of the problem on the linear level. So we need to demand that this whatever matrix A of VW we write down, it also has to have only real eigenvalues and a complete set of eigenvectors. And so in general, using the Godunov scheme by replacing the exact Riemann solver with this linearized solver is usually referred to as the so-called Rho scheme. Okay, so now having sort of written this down, this idea by Rho in sort of this compact form, I wanted to start and actually motivate some of these assumptions here. So, the first thing is that this whole idea about linearization is actually well motivated in a computational context where we have a fine enough resolution, simply because typically in most parts of our solution, in most parts of our real space, the solution will be smooth or continuous. Except for some fronts, for some shock fronts, for example, where we have to take special care, and I'll discuss this in a second. But if, as long as the solution is smooth, then we don't expect these neighboring states to be that different. So this is essentially what motivates the linearized approach. Linearized problem justified at most cell interfaces. So if there are no discontinuities, then we expect the difference between the neighboring states to be small, and so to be sort of more precise, we expect it to be to somehow scale with our grid resolution delta x. And so if we make this if we go to the limit of high resolution, we can make it arbitrarily small. And hence also the Jacobian will not vary dramatically as you go from one cell to the other. And so we can essentially think of the conservation law here as being well approximated by this quasi-linear form, where this matrix here is essentially the Jacobian evaluated at some appropriate average state between the two grid cells. So we think of this here as a constant matrix, and U bar is some reasonable suitable average state that depends on UI plus one and UI that is still to be found, and we'll discuss this in just a few minutes. So just to give you essentially the basic idea. And so if we look at the situation in state space, we have these two state vectors, ui plus one, and ui will be very close to each other. So the if you remember the general or general solution strategy to the general Riemann problem. So if these sort of two state vectors come arbitrarily close to each other, then all the integral curves and the Gugno loci or the shock sets, in other words, that we would need to connect these two states would then essentially be straight lines as we get arbitrarily close, as these two states get arbitrarily close. So, and that simplifies the Riemann problem enormously. We actually don't need to find these integral curves and shock sets in great detail, but we only need to actually find the eigenvectors and eigenvalues of the Jacobian at that point. And those would then sort of give us a coordinate system locally, assuming that the corresponding integral curves and Gugno loci are actually straight lines. So let me just draw this a little bit here. So let's say we're here in state space, and so that would be Rm, where M is again the number of equations we have. And let's say we just look at this projected problem to the, you know, first two dimensions of our conserved variables. And let's say we have UIN here. And let's say the neighboring grid cell, the state of the neighboring grid cell, you know, is very close. We're in fairly smooth conditions. And let's say that, for example, the two shock sets or integral curves, so these were these curves that we denoted by T1, so TK, where K goes from 1 to M, associated with every each eigenvector of the Jacobian, we have one of these curves that essentially provide us with something like coordinates in our state space, at least in some finite region, d tilde. So this was our notation back then, where we where these coordinate lines, or where essentially these special curves provide something like coordinate lines, and so we can connect any two states within the set by a unique combination of these nonlinear weights, and that corresponds to our general solution to the corresponding Riemann problem. And now here, if we are arbitrarily closed, then essentially we can just describe the state ui plus one as a linear combination of these eigenvectors here, assuming that locally these special curves T1 to Tm are essentially straight lines in the vicinity of uin. So we can essentially write down ui plus one n minus uin as a linear combination of the eigenvectors Rk, so where Rk are the eigenvectors of our Jacobian at UIN. And so this is infinitesimal Riemann problem. And you may remember we actually wrote this down back then when we discussed the general Riemann problem. So this is essentially the basic idea of the situation in state space. And so this should apply to essentially most grid cells in a practical problem, so in a practical numerical domain. Except in those situations where we might actually have strong shocks, and by strong shocks meaning I mean actual sort of macroscopic traveling ways. So near shocks in our global solution, then we know that UI plus one and UI cannot be arbitrarily close to each other. So there's at least a few of these conserved variables that are discontinuous. And so they, in state space, they are not arbitrarily close to each other. So some may be, but so for example, in I think the same essentially applies to contact discontinuities, where some quantities stay constant, k Riemann invariants, for example, while others are discontinuous. So in these cases, we are not in the above situation. And so let me just try to draw this. So maybe separate the par in state space. And so this means that at least in one direction, along a shock set. So let me try to, okay, let me keep this up there and see if I can draw the same thing here. Okay, so here we have again UIN. So imagine, for example, this situation here where we have again our special curves T1 and T2. And so this is the region where we expect a solution to the general Riemann problem to exist. And now imagine that this part here is actually a shock set. So let's say this is SKS minus. So this was the, you remember, this was the admissible part of our shock set. And let's say that UI plus one N is down here. So it is not arbitrarily close to UIN, and it will also not get arbitrarily close to UIN as we refine our separation, our grid spacing. So this discontinuity will be, if that's really a physical discontinuity, it will not go away. And so it will not tend to get arbitrarily close to this other state. And so we want, obviously, the linearized Riemann solver to be able to capture such shocks, because that was the whole idea why we started with the Godunov scheme, because we wanted to actually resolve physical discontinuities of the solution. So we actually want to compute weak solutions, and if we let the linearized Riemann solver essentially eliminate those, then it would obviously not be of any use. So we somehow need to make sure that we can capture such cases . And so the idea is to make this a requirement on this approximation matrix A. And this is how the first requirement that I listed above actually comes about. And so the idea is simply to demand that if there's a physical shock that separates these two states, UI plus one and UI N, then that this is an eigenvector of A because we'll then see that it actually so that it's actually on a shockwave of the denoise problem and can thus be captured. So the denoise problem captures the shock. So essentially what we want is, let me actually move this a little further down. So graphically, you can think of this as like, if we are down here on a shock set, for example, then if we would have just described the state by these sort of straight lines here, we would actually miss that point. So we actually want this point to be on a shock set of the linear problem. So meaning that it's actually that the actual eigenvalue, the actual eigenvector actually points in this direction. So that the difference here is actually an eigenvector of the approximate Jacobian that we specify. And so how is this useful? So if we look at the jump conditions, so remember the jump conditions are these, where the difference in fluxes equals the shock speed times the difference in state vectors. And we now require, this to be an eigenstate of our approximate Jacobian, then we get the following expression. So we have V minus W. And so this is exactly the first requirement that we listed up here in our sort of definition of the row problem. So if the approximate Jacobian satisfies this relation, we've just shown that neighboring grid points will always be on a shock set, and so we can capture those shocks if they are indeed physical. Any questions so far? So this is essentially just to make sure that the linearized problem can actually capture discontinuities of the nonlinear solution. But then, so if there are no questions, I would just go on. Okay, and so the second question is...
Sorry, Daniela, yeah. I was thinking a little bit. So So captures means that if you have an exact shock, then the approximate Riemann solver actually gives you the exact solution for the shock.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, otherwise, if you're not dealing with an actual shock, then you're basically tolerating some kind of approximate solution to the Riemann problem.
That's correct, yeah.
So I guess the question I have is, so how does the code know what's a real shock? I mean, is there a criterion on, you know, the size of the jump, or maybe it doesn't matter? I mean,
how the code knows about a real shock
I guess it doesn't matter, right? I mean, because the statement is that if it's a real shock, then it knows what to do. if it's not a real shock, it does whatever it does.
Exactly. So it's just implemented in this way. So if you would not implement a scheme that adheres to this requirement here, then things may just go very wrong. The question is, I don't have a good intuition for how the solution would actually look like. That's a good point. I don't know.
Okay, no, but I think I'm not sure I was making a point. I think it's just that this criterion here guarantees that, you know, real shocks will be reproduced by the approximate code.
Right. So
by the approximate solution.
Exactly. So there are two things essentially. So one is that if it's not a real shock, then you're really close to this linearized problem up here. And so then the linearized problem captures shocks, even if they were, you know, very small or tiny, and you would get the correct answer. The question is really, once you go out of the linearized regime and you have a strong physical shock, then in principle, this scheme here would not give you the right answer, because you could not describe this point down here in state space by just a linear combination of the eigenvectors at this part here. So if that was an actual strong shock associated with one of the eigenvectors of the nonlinear problem, you would simply, the whole linear ansatz would not be valid unless you make this an exact eigenvalue of the approximate Jacobian here, so that the linear ansatz of decomposing the two states in this fashion here, as just a linear combination, is still valid, and so the linearized solver gives you the correct solution.
Right. Okay. And I guess I missed part of the fine print in that. So the S that you get as your eigenvalue is the actual shock speed, right? So
that's correct. Yeah.
That's part of the requirement on A.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, now comes essentially the question of does such a approximate a Jacobian actually exist? So can we actually specify such a scheme that fulfills these requirements? And the answer is yes. How do we actually construct it? So I just wanted to quickly go over this just to give you an idea of how one can actually construct such a matrix in general. Essentially, the idea to start with is we can again look in state space and integrate the flux function along a path in state space. So let's say we connect we go in state space and we just connect the two neighboring grid cells, the states corresponding to the neighboring grid cells by just a straight line in state space. So that would be, for example, one obvious choice. So we just have a straight line parameterized by a parameter xi that goes from 0 to 1. And so the realization is that if we integrate along this line, we can actually re-express this in terms of we can actually re-express this in terms of this flux difference. So if we look at the derivative of f of the flux function along this path, right, we can just reformulate this essentially just as the, using the chain rule, just as the Jacobian df evaluated along the line. And then we have just u prime of xi d xi. And so this would then just be, so u xi, as you can see here, will just, u xi prime will just be this difference here. So we have ui plus 1n minus uin, and then times this integral over the Jacobian. Oops. And so we could actually call this our matrix A. And so this expression would satisfy exactly this condition that we just derived, that ui minus, or say this flux difference here, state vector difference here has to be an eigenvector of the Jacobian that we discussed up here. So it would automatically by construction satisfy one, and it would also satisfy our requirement two, namely if we take the limit of ui plus one going to ui, so the limit of both states being equal, then obviously we get just the physical Jacobian back of our nonlinear conservation law. So the requirement two would also be satisfied. But the problem is that the third property, namely hyperbolicity, will not necessarily be guaranteed. So even if you know the Jacobian at each individual point would be hyperbolic, it's not guaranteed that the line integral of those Jacobians would be hyperbolic. So that's a sort of nice ansatz, but in order to also guarantee the third point, actually what Rho, and this was his original proposal in 1981 actually, is to sort of reformulate this a little bit and construct this matrix in a slightly different way. And so he introduced a coordinate transformation to some other conserved variable vector z, which as a function of u. So let's assume we introduce such a coordinate transformation and we assume that it's well behaved, so it's invertible and everything. Then what he was proposing essentially is to look at the path in these new coordinates . So where Zi is just defined as Z of ui. So we just look at sort of a similar path, but in the transformed variables. And so then in an attempt to find a similar expression for the flux and state vector differences, we can try and do the same exercise of writing this as a line integral. Where now we actually write this in terms of the Jacobian with respect to the new coordinates. So here we have now the Jacobian df, but with respect to these new coordinates z. And so if we define this now as a new matrix, let's say this is C of ui and ui plus one, that in principle can be written down at any cell interface. Now we want to connect this in a similar fashion with the state vector difference as above, like here, hoping to find an expression of this type here. And so now we can also write down the state vector difference as a line integral along this path. So again, by the chain rule, we have this. And again, we're making use of the fact that z prime here just returns the difference in these new state variables. So we have z I plus one minus z I times the integral over du set of xi divided by dz dxi. And so let's define this as b of ui comma ui plus one as essentially another matrix b. And then putting these things together, if we now define a of ui comma ui plus one as just a matrix product between the two, yeah, so putting things together here, so essentially eliminating this difference z I plus one minus z I from these two equations, we'll actually find a condition of this type here if we define A to be the product of z and b. And so this was essentially his proposal, hoping that essentially specifying this coordinate transformation z in a clever way, one can make these integrals simple integrals that that one can actually solve. Because in general, the expression up here, there might not even be a closed form for this integral, for example, or so. And so in these cases, by using this coordinate transformation, he was also hoping to find to reduce this essentially to simpler integral expressions. And we'll discuss actually specific choices for these coordinate transformations that in a few moments when I'll illustrate the concept for the example of the Euler equations. But this is just essentially the general idea of how such a matrix can possibly construct it, essentially by computing these integrals. Now, Hart and Luxe and Van Leer, then just a few years later, 1983, showed that if one allows for such a coordinate transformation, this procedure actually guarantees condition three. So one actually finds that the resulting matrix A is symmetric, and hence it's has real eigenvalues, and therefore it's a symmetric hyperbolic problem. And essentially, the way that they showed that this is always possible in this way is to look at, in general case, for a general system of m hyperbolic equations, if we have a entropy function, so an entropy pair corresponding to the conservation law, then such a procedure is always possible. So if we have such an entropy function phi available, then essentially what they showed is that if one chooses such a coordinate transformation z of u defined as the gradient of phi of u, so where this gradient is with respect to the conserved variables, so with respect to u, so it lives in Rm, then with this coordinate transformation, the resulting matrix A that you would get from this procedure, which is also called A HLL for Hart and Luxe and Van Leer, is symmetric and has therefore real eigenvalues. So it's symmetric hyperbolic, and so the third condition is also achieved. So this is essentially just a general idea of how to do this in a general case. Now in practice, if one actually wants to implement this in an algorithm, then obviously you want this to be an easy scheme that is cheap. And so you don't want actually to compute complicated integrals. So you need to make sure that this matrix can be somehow analytically calculated in a general sense. And then you just need to evaluate the corresponding eigenvectors and eigenvalues for which you also hope to have sort of closed form expressions for any general state in your state space. Otherwise, obviously, this scheme would not be very cheap, and I'll show the example of the Euler equations in just a second. But for now, I just wanted to keep the discussion general enough. So this essentially motivates these 3 points that we formulated up here. So in the general case, such an approximate matrix can be found, at least in principle, for any given nonlinear set of conservation laws with an entropy flux pair. And now obviously another important aspect is to show that the scheme modified in this way, so the Godunov scheme modified with this approximate Riemann solver is actually still a conservative scheme. That is not entirely clear yet, but this is something that can be shown. I will only write it down here and not attempt to show it because it would just take us too much time. But maybe I should stop here and ask if there were any questions up to here. So I will, in this chapter here, I will skip, you know, deriving a few results, and I'll try to avoid going to too much detail, just in order to give you the basic idea and the basic sort of logical steps of how these approximations work. If, you know, later on you're actually using some of these in your daily work, maybe in some codes or so, you can pick up some of these, some of the discussion here, and read more about the details. But for now, I will just present some of the things here as kind of black boxes, just to be able to move on quicker, and but still to make you aware of a few subtleties and issues here. So it can then be shown that so this statement here can be shown, namely that such a matrix exists. So this is essentially what we've done already, except for the part that we skipped, the crucial proof here by the crucial result by Harten, Lax, and van Leer. But so this essentially addresses the existence of such a matrix in the general case. And the second part of the statement is that the resulting scheme is still in conservative form, and hence with the Lax-Vandroff theorem that we discussed in the previous lectures, we are then guaranteed to converge to a weak solution of the nonlinear problem. And I just wanted to write this down here for those of you who are interested to see the actual flux function of the scheme. So the flux function for the row scheme would be this. We have taking the flux difference between the two different cells, the neighboring cells, and then we have here we have a combination of these eigenvectors of A. And eigenvectors of A of V comma W. And these coefficients also often referred to as wave strengths. Alpha K are exactly determined by this expansion of the difference in state vectors in state space in terms of the eigenvectors. And so if you want to look up the detailed derivation, so in the book of by Toro, you'll find a detailed discussion on this in section 11.1. So for those of you who want to dig into the details here. But I wanted to essentially skip this result, just noting that we still have a conservative scheme. So we are guaranteed to converge to a weak solution. Once we know the approximate Jacobian A. And that's a big if, and so we still have to show that in some practical examples that can be written down easily and efficiently. But if such if we know such a matrix A, then the linearized Riemann problem, the solution to the linearized Riemann problem, can be written down very easily, and you just need to solve essentially a system of linear equations. So this is what I wanted to note here. And this is essentially, you know, the whole point of going to this linear, to this linearized ansatz, simply because in the linearized, for the linearized Riemann problem, you can write down the solution fairly easily. And I will just also only write down the solution here without deriving it in more detail. We haven't discussed the linearized Riemann problem yet in detail, but I'm also not planning to, because the only time that we'll actually have to deal with this is right here for this row solver. And other than for the row solver, the linearized Riemann problem doesn't really, it's not of big relevance. But I just wanted to note that this is the form of the solution. So again, like in the nonlinear case, we have the sequence of waves corresponding to each eigenvector. So case one goes from one to m, labeled our the number of So this is actually m minus one. So these are these intermediate states. And so these intermediate states are just linear combinations of the eigenvectors. So this is UL plus, and then we need to sum from J1 to K, alpha J, RJ. And these coefficients, alpha J, are given by the by this decomposition in state space of the neighboring state vectors. So UR minus UL equals sum of J equals 1 to M. Alpha J RJ. So essentially the idea is we linearize the problem, we construct such an approximate Jacobian matrix, we compute the eigenvectors and eigenvalues, and then we can immediately write down the solution just in terms of these eigenvalues and eigenvectors here. And so this is all essentially analytic equations that we can write down and evaluate for a given UR and UL. And so instead of doing a Newton-Raphson iteration process as in the exact Riemann solver, we can just essentially plug in values here and do a few algebraic manipulations and find the solution more efficiently. So this is how the row solver would specify the Riemann problem at each cell interface. But then in general, the previous theorem here only tells us that we have a conservative scheme, but it doesn't tell us anything about guaranteeing that we actually find the correct weak solution, the physical solution, meaning the entropy solution. So it's not yet guaranteed that it will actually converge to the entropy solution. And that's actually an issue with the row solver, Because in general, it can be shown that the role scheme in its most simple form does not approximate the entropy solution of the nonlinear of the actual nonlinear problem. And in order to guarantee that, additional fixes are again needed. And so this is usually referred to as entropy fixes. So you may come across those if you look into role solvers in more detail. There's also more discussion here in Toro's book and also in Levesque's book, if you want to read up on this. Essentially, if you just want to get the brief idea of what that is about, so in principle, the issue is that in the linearized Riemann problem, one can show that all these these waves here. So if you look at the Riemann problem in the linearized for a linearized system, you can show that essentially all these eigenstates are correspond to actual shock waves. So there are no rarefaction waves in the linearized Riemann problem. And so if the nonlinear solution is actually a strong rarefaction wave, then the linearized role solver will not be able to properly resolve that. But what it will try to do is essentially replace the rarefaction wave, which is this continuous nonlinear wave where you have diverging characteristics. It will simply try to replace this with an expansion shock. So this is something that we also discussed some time ago. So we'll try to replace this with a shock that doesn't satisfy the entropy condition. So a shock front, a discontinuity where essentially the characteristics emanate from the shock front. So we have divergent initial data. And so these characteristics will just emanate from the shock front, from the discontinuity. And that we don't want. But the role solver could actually put these unphysical solutions into our overall global solution. And therefore, the overall Godunov solution of the scheme may actually not converge to the entropy solution. So that is an issue. And but there exist a few fixes for this where one tries to identify essentially which of those eigenvalues would actually correspond to a rarefaction wave in the nonlinear case. And then you try to modify those expressions for that particular shock and try to mimic something like a rarefaction wave so that in the end you converge to the entropy solution. So there are a few methods to do this, but all the details are fairly technical, and so I think it doesn't make sense to go into this in too great detail, but just to make you aware of the fact that when dealing with the role scheme, one always has to make sure that appropriate entropy fixes are in place so that the actual entropy solution is picked out in your simulation. And the third point I wanted to note here is that, as I mentioned in general, and this is just really a side note, so in general, as I pointed out, if one wants to construct this approximate matrix just for a general set of conservation laws, that may be complicated and expensive to do, depending on your conservation law. So remember, essentially, we need to solve these integrals. And there has been some ideas of actually circumventing this problem of, and it's the so-called rho pike method. Also, there's some discussion in Toro's book, section 11.3, if you want to know more, where essentially the idea is to skip this first stage of the algorithm of finding the matrix, but rather you can derive using a slightly different linearization ansatz than this original rho method that I presented here. If you do it slightly differently, you can actually write down expressions for the eigenvectors and eigenvalues of that matrix without actually computing the matrix. So this is sort of a little trick to write, to essentially fast forward to this stage where you can then just directly plug in the expressions for the eigenvectors and eigenvalues, because this is really all you need to know to specify the solution here. And so if you can analytically compute these eigenvectors and eigenvalues efficiently, then that sort of speeds up the process a lot. And so they developed this general method to do this for sort of general types of conservation laws. So I just wanted to briefly note this here as well for completeness. Okay, any questions to now? So if not, I'll just quickly tell you how this would look like for the Euler equations, because this will obviously be sort of one of the prime applications. And also here, I'll just, you know, give a brief summary here without going through the derivations. Okay, let's skip this. So again, we're in the conservative form of our Euler equations in this way. And so the original idea by Rho was then to, for the Euler equation specifically, one can easily construct such a matrix A by looking at the specific coordinate transformation where Z equals U divided by actually the square root of the density of the fluid. So for this specific coordinate transformation, he was able to derive the following, namely that following the procedure I introduced above with these line integrals, if you compute this matrix C and B, and then you multiply the two, you'll find that the final matrix A is actually given, can be written as the Jacobian of the nonlinear, so of the conservation law, but not evaluated at either UL or UR, but actually at some sort of mean value U bar. This is what I was already alluding to at the beginning. So this here is the actual Jacobian with respect, just to make things very explicit, to this is the actual Jacobian with respect to U, but then you just replace U by U bar to get the correct expression. And so, in fact, here you don't have to compute any complicated integrals or so. So this is a fairly neat expression. And so these so-called rho mean values can also be written down in a fairly compact way. And so these are typically the values that, you would see for the rho scheme applied to the Euler equations. UL plus UR. And then there's also the enthalpy involved. So where A, where H is internal energy plus pressure over density. So specific and so these values are known as so-called rho mean values. And if you choose it in this fashion, then rho showed that this matrix actually satisfies all three conditions, 1, 2, 3. And so this is how one would essentially use it for the Euler equations.
So is this Z, is it related to the gradient of a of an entropy function?
That's a good question. This is not related to, it's not related to the actual physical entropy. Interestingly, I don't know exactly about the historical context here, but this result here was derived before, it's a really good point. So this result was essentially derived heuristically more or less before HLL, so Hartmann, Lux, and von Leer actually found this other result about using the entropy function to provide such a mean value, such an approximate Jacobian. In this case, it would not be exactly the recipe by Hartmann, Lux, and von Leer. This is just a different ansatz that turns out to be particularly simple.
Right, but I guess if it doesn't satisfy their condition, then the weak solution may not be an entropy solution in this scheme. So I thought that their criterion mm-hmm. was guaranteeing that the weak solution that you get from the scheme would be an entropy solution.
That's not correct, unfortunately. So this doesn't guarantee. The point of their theorem was to show that it is hyperbolic. Retains that property. Because hyperbolicity was still an open question, and so they proved that using this entropy function, you can always derive, following this recipe, you can always derive or obtain a approximate Jacobian that is that satisfies all three conditions. But it doesn't mean necessarily that this is the only way how to find it.
Right. I misunderstood. So.
Right. So rho essentially discovered earlier, just essentially heuristically, but I'm not entirely familiar with the historical context here, found this particular transformation that led him to this approximate Jacobian that also satisfies all the three criteria. So he doesn't need to make use of this other theorem.
Right. Okay.
But this other theorem is sort of important in the general context. So if you would sort of consider other conservation laws, so maybe, for example, MHD or meter hydrodynamic equations or other things like that. So in a more complicated context, you would then probably resort to that theorem. Mm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and just as a final remark here, on the scheme, although as we now discussed, we still get a conservative scheme with the approximate role solver. There are entropy fixes that can fix some of the deficiencies, and we are guaranteed to find an entropy solution. But then there's still one deficiency, one problem left with the role scheme. And that has to do with the positivity of thermodynamic of the conserved and primitive variables. So in general, one can show that the role scheme does not guarantee positive pressure and densities. So there can be cases, and there exist specific examples to illustrate this, in which the role solver actually returns unphysical solutions. So it might find that the density and the pressure are negative. And typically one falls into these problems when one has fairly tenuous plasma flows, or so one is sort of close to vacuum. So where low densities are expected. So this again requires some additional fixes. So one can further complicate the scheme. There's, if you're specifically interested, there's a paper by Einfeld et al. In 1991, who deals with some possible solutions to this. But even with some fixes you can possibly think of, you'll find it in this paper, they show that still for certain Riemann problems, there exists no linearization of this row type that preserves positivity of rho and also the internal energy and also the pressure in certain cases. And so that's actually an important result that is essentially mathematical proof that no matter how careful you try to avoid running into these problems, you will never get around those. And so this is why one has to caution essentially a lot when using the role solver. So depending on the problem, you may want to use something that is more robust and that actually doesn't show such unphysical parts of the parameter space. And that leads essentially, that will lead us next time. So I see that time is up and we should stop here. But so this will lead us to discuss the so-called HLL family of Riemann solvers, of approximate Riemann solvers next time, which is sort of more robust approximate Riemann solver that in particular guarantees the positivity of these primitive variables in the case of the Euler equations. And has also another a few other nice features. It also guarantees a convergence to the entropy solution, for example, without any additional fixes, and it's they are easy to evaluate, so fairly cheap computationally speaking. And so this is why essentially the HLL family of Riemann solvers is much more sort of widely used than the Rho solver. Okay.